This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Good afternoon and welcome. We're here for TogiNet Radio's Indie Book Publishing author interviews this afternoon. My name is Deb Han and I am delighted to be here today with Lainey May. How are you, Lainey?
I'm very well, thanks, Deb.
Excellent. Now, you are the wonderful author of a fabulous novella called Even the Land Cries. I loved reading this book. As a novella, it is only just over 100 pages to read, but wow, do you know how to tell a story and bring everything into this story? And it was such a personal journey for you, yeah?
Yes, it was. It's a country area that I absolutely love still. And the actual homestead that the story is woven around, it's just beautiful. You can stand on the veranda and breathe in the history. How about that?
Absolutely. And now, listen, let's set the scene a little for our listeners, because, like you say, you can stand on that homestead and take in that gorgeous vista and the history and so on. But this is written in a different time. It's written back in the 1800s, isn't it?
1868. Yes,
yeah. So set the scene for us, Lainey. Let our people know what to expect about Even the Land Cries and what your motivation was for writing and sharing the story.
Yeah, well, it was because I lived on the property. There was something intangible about the property. Now, I'm not into spooks I don't go down that track. But there was something at this property that it just gripped me, and I couldn't put my finger on what it was about. We had a visitor from a family of the people who had actually built the property up eventually. I'd had a visit eventually, and they bought us a copy of their great-great-grandfather's diary. It was a police constable's diary.
Okay.
And it was about the property, and it was just unbelievable, beautiful, real West Australian history.
Yeah. So like you say, it's really about the early settlings of your family then, in a way. So you... It's not, there's an element of, I'm looking for words here. It's a bit like, what is it, never let the truth get in the way of a good story or whatever. I mean, there's more truth than fiction in this. Is that right?
Oh, there's definitely truth. It's the background is truth.
Yeah.
But the fiction has to be wound around it, because there wasn't... There isn't anything up to date that I can look back on and see this person married that person, did this, did that. If I wanted to, I guess I could go down that track. But it was never my family, but the people who built the place up, they gave us this diary because we were living on the property and we'd opened it up for people to come have a look. It was actually a National Trust property.
Wow.
At the top. So, yeah, there was so much on it, you know. You could even walk out the backyard and trip over a piece of chain linked to cell bars, which was obviously from the prison that each property was supposed to build up to put prisoners in until the constables could get there from far away distances. So, everywhere we went, the kids found stuff there that was just amazing, great place. Needed to be told. This story just needed to be told.
And you tell it so well. And I think one of the things that our listeners don't have an appreciation for right now is that really the ruggedness of this story. So you tell the story of the, when we talk about early settlers, we talk about the Irish, you know, the Irish family history. And to be honest, I love the way that as you've written, I can't help but there's the dialogue, you know, between the family members, and you even write with that Irish accent, and I really found myself as I was reading with an Irish accent. It was very, very well done the way you did that. It created a beautiful cadence in the storytelling and built a beautiful imagery up around the people. And I think the other thing that I think you captured beautifully was the ruggedness of life back then. We can get very caught up in our modern way of being, and we forget that some of the journeys that these two young men went on as part of this journey. You forget that those roads didn't exist at that point in time, and paths didn't exist. They really did create their own pathways in many ways. Yeah,
they did. And the trees are forests, and there would have been a huge taking to get in a dray and head off from mum and dad and travel to this boy's property. There would have been so many dangers and so many things to get through that he did quite capably. To be short of water out in those areas, so that's just, you don't want to be there.
No.
And just the fantasy of the story, they got to that point and the young fella's almost having a mental breakdown over it, which I think I would have too if I'd have been him. My younger brother there that was relying on me to get him out of it. But it is still, there's places in our country that are just isolated, rugged and hard on the people. It's just a beautiful, beautiful country that we live in. I'm intent on finding other history, because it's all there, but it's never spoken about. We don't have to be ashamed of our history. There needs to be perhaps an apology or whatever, but then that can come from many different sides of whatever a subject we talk about. But there's just so much that we could uncover, and I think we should be very proud of these two young men at the ages they were. I was led to believe that the older boy was 18 years of age. In the 20, I thought that might be a little bit more believable. But, you know, for those two boys, and they actually did go from a port town in the south coast and found their property and built it up. That's unbelievable. We should be very proud of them.
Absolutely. I think yourself can be very proud of the way you tell the story of their the adventure, the hardship, the tenacity, and the respect too in which they conducted themselves as young men as well. You talk about Aboriginal heritage as well, and you weave that into the storyline. In fact, I have to say, as part of the story, you cover it all. You really do. I mean, you've got this wonderful way. So there's history in there. You've woven the fiction in through the history to incorporate. There's the love stories, both forbidden and romance as well. You've got the whole shipwreck scenario and the survival that goes on from there. Cruelty, death, loss. And I'm reading your words here where you talk about the shipwreck, survival, cruelty, death, loss, lies, trickery, hatred, despair, and resilient, all-conquering love. Seriously, you cover the spectrum and you do it with such dignity and style. You really do. Are there highlights in this story for you, Lainey? Are there particular passages of this story that that really gripped you while you were writing them?
Yes, the shipwreck. That was very gripping when I was writing it. The story of the forbidden love. I didn't think I possibly had it in me to write about such a story, but I got that settled and written down, and that was good. I was quite interested. This is really strange, Deb, because you don't write a book about the hero of the book, and right at the end you twist it to find that he's actually he just doesn't have the tenacity to stand up to situations on his property where he's having animals, cows, sheep taken away by, they're being stolen. Mm. And he doesn't stand up for himself. So I didn't plan to do that. It just happened.
Yeah.
I was just writing it and it just, and this boy too, I was hoping people would catch that on the journey with his brother to the property, he was actually having, he was in the middle of a lot of depression. The depression was there in those days. And his young brother couldn't see it, but Daniel, the other friend of theirs that was with them, I think he picked it up. I brought it out that he picked it up, that this young man was having problems with what was happening for them. And then later on in the story, he seems to take on the attitude and the character of a depressed person, which there's nothing against him in that situation, but we need to see that these things have been around forever.
Yeah.
People reacted in different ways, and this was the hero of the story. He reacted to the strain and the stress that he'd been under, and he turned out to be a very bigoted brawler with his brother over the girl that the brother loved and her little Aboriginal child. So it was very different. Yes, I was amazed at what came out. So
yeah. It's wonderful how you say the story kind of wrote itself in the end, and how it all unfolded for you. So I want to congratulate you on this book. Please tell me and share with our listeners too, please, Lainey, how can people find a copy of Even the Land Cries? How can they get hold of this book for themselves?
There is something at Balboa have just... checking there, that might be.
So on Balboa Publishing, via Balboa Publishing, they can get hold of the Even the Land Cries.
And also they can go to the e-books. It's on the e-book list. But Balboa Publishing at the moment is possibly the only place you'll get a copy, unless you go into your favourite bookstore and order one. And they might catch on that it's worth getting in and order something for other people as well. It's just very much a matter of getting the word out that this is an Australian historical book, wound around with wonderful love stories and characters that most of us might have met out in the bush somewhere.
And I was going to say, I think one of the key things that I certainly take away from the book and is that when you say even the land cries, even the land tells the truth if you stand still long enough to have a look and see. It won't, and it's always going to bear the scars, so of whatever its story is. And it's just, do you have the awareness to take it in or not? And I really want to thank you, Lainey, for having the passion and tenacity to tell this story, because I know you've clearly researched it a great deal and you've written it beautifully, and I would recommend it to anybody listening. If you have a fascination for Australian history, for adventure, for love, for forbidden love, for culture, and great stories, then please do yourself a big favour and check out Even the Land Cries.
But no, thank you very much, Deb. It's been wonderful to be able to talk to you, and I'll get back to you when I get my next book out.
Look forward to that one. Absolutely look forward to that one. Lainey, thank you so much for spending time with me. My name is Deb Hand, and it's been a pleasure to be with you today on behalf of Indie Book Publishing. Thank you.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Welcome, everybody, to Toginet Radio's Indie Book Publishing Author Interviews. My name is Deb Han, and it is my pleasure to be with you today and introduce the gorgeous Nicole Suzanne, the beautiful author of Nirvana, The Angel Dream. How are you, Nicole?
Oh, hi, Deb. I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Excellent.
Lovely to be here.
Yeah, and good to have you here as well. Tell me more and more about this gorgeous book, this beautiful book, Nirvana, The Angel Dream. How did you come to write this beautiful book?
Well, Deb, I was unable to work as I injured my whole right upper quadrant in a workplace incident in 2010.
Wow.
I was recovering from my second shoulder operation when a dear friend of mine, Niall, he's a music producer from niallmusic.com, he just said to me in an email, you know, with your 3D way of thinking and your wonderful imagination, have you ever thought of writing any children's books? Well, I remember at the time this light bulb just went off in my head, and I thought to myself, who, me? Really? Write children's books? You know, I was just a little bit overwhelmed, but I thought, well, that would be a wonderful idea. But I also thought, well, where do I start? But, you know, the minute I made up my mind to start writing, I put my earphones on and I started listening to Niall's angelic music. And it just took me away to another world. It really inspired me to write from my heart. And all these ideas just started flowing to me. And everything just started beautifully unfolding. You know, it was just, it was really amazing how it just all happened. And then in another email, he said to me, you know, why don't I put together a music backing? And with your narration, why don't we put together an audio book? And I thought that was a fabulous idea.
Yeah.
So he just sent me a sample of his music and a sample of his narration, and just so that we could hear what it would sound like as an audio, and I absolutely loved it. I actually thought that his voice was perfectly suited for narration because it was calming and relaxing, and I thought it would be perfect for bedtime storytelling. So he actually produced all three audio books for me. I've written three books in the series, and each track that he used in each audiobook is from his album titled Earth Angels. So I'm very thankful to Niall, because without his kind words of support and encouragement, none of this would have come about and there wouldn't be any books or audiobooks. So, you know, I'm greatly appreciative of him. And I'm also very thankful to my beautiful illustrator, Sheridan Thoms, for her exquisite artwork. She's done some beautiful work for me, and I'm so thankful for that too.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's beautifully illustrated, absolutely beautifully illustrated. Tell me, how did you find her? Did you know her already? Or?
No, I feel truly blessed, believe me. I actually just Googled Illustrators Melbourne, and there she was. She just popped up. She was up the top there, and she's incredibly gifted and very talented, and she's an absolute pleasure to work with. So, yeah, I'm very, very thankful for her.
So you've got to love a bit of inspired serendipity.
Yes, that's right.
That's beautiful. Well done. Also, it is something of a modern fairy tale in some ways, and or in many ways, and it's just like you say, it's beautifully written and beautifully illustrated. I haven't had the pleasure of listening to an audio book or the audio book version, unfortunately, but I'm going to have to put that on my to-do list for sure. So tell me, Nicole, who does the book appeal to, and why?
Well, I wouldn't like to put an age bracket on my book. It's a beautiful fairy tale, and I think it appeals to all ages. My readers vary from 5 to 65, and everyone who has read it has really enjoyed it, and I think there is something in my book for everyone. I think whoever reads it will take something away from it. There are very special messages in my book, messages and morals about love and humanity. And these are messages that I want to reach the world. Mm. You know, I hope everyone who does read them will benefit from them. I have traveled third world countries, and what I witnessed there was that these people don't have very much at all. Yet they're always so happy and positive. And they treat you, they're always smiling and they're always laughing, and they treat you with love and kindness and compassion and respect. And I certainly learnt something from that. And it was this experience that inspired me to promote these kinds of messages in my book.
Wonderful. It certainly, when you travel, it redefines the word richness, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Well done. Beautifully put too, by the way, Nicole. So are they the key messages that you really want people to take from your readings? Like, if there was one thing that you wanted your readers to walk away with, regardless of their age, be they 5, 35 or 65? You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think all ages will benefit from reading my book. What I want is, I'm trying to raise conscious awareness to everyone, but especially to young children, because I think it's very important that children learn and are aware from a very young age that what they think, what they say, what they feel and what they do creates their life. So if they're aware of this and they keep things positive, live life with love, kindness and compassion and appreciation, then they can deliberately create the life of their dreams. I'm hoping by memorising the simple messages in my books and putting them into practice on a daily basis, they'll be able to achieve this.
Beautiful. So tell me, I know a lot of this was, you know, inspirational for you, but is there a particular place, or is there a particular place you imagine your stories take place?
Well, yes, my imagination took over, actually. But my story takes place in the magical world of Nirvana, which is way up high in the sky. And everything has a face and everything speaks, including the trees and the flowers and the birds. They all speak.
Wow.
Cute little dwarfs live in Nirvana, and they live in heart-shaped houses. The other magical places in my story are Oberon Palace, where the fairies live, and the Zubon Kingdom, where the angels live.
That is adorable. Absolutely. I love the imagery even about that. You know, it sort of conjures up all kinds of gorgeousness, I have to say. So in relation to that, are there any, particular scenes or characters that that really, I don't know, speak to you, or if you were going to make a, if this was, okay, it's already an audio book, if it was going to become a movie or be, you know.
Well, funny you should say that.
Okay, you know where I was going, right?
That's my ultimate dream, is to have a movie made out of my books, because then my messages would reach more people. So, but in regards to the characters, I have some really fun characters. And I know we're talking about my first book, but even in the second and third book, I introduce new characters. But in this book, Flynn the Dwarf would undoubtedly be one of my favourite characters.
He is adorable. He is absolutely adorable. I've got an image of Flynn in my mind, I have to tell you.
He's the cutest little button. But he has control in the story, and he delivers all the messages. He's really funny, and he's cheeky, and he's always so excited, and he questions everything. He's a very positive, optimistic person, and he loves to help people.
Can you share his mission? I love his mission. You know, share Flynn's, you know, what's his purpose in life, basically?
Exactly that. He actually inspires everybody else to be positive and in everything they do, think happy thoughts, and he loves helping people. He gets very, very excited when he can help people.
It's true.
So, yeah.
I love that bit when he says, oh, you can't be sad. Nobody
is sad in the world of Nirvana. Yeah. Everybody is happy. That's the positive vibe that my book promotes. So, but Flynn, and there's a beautiful character, Fairy Maya, and Fairy Maya and Flynn are wonderful friends. They're best friends, and Fairy Maya has this wonderful gift, and no matter where she is, she can hear Flynn's voice when he calls. So he can be in Nirvana and she can be in Oberon Palace, and he just calls her name, and she, you know, she pops in and out of places in a blink of an eye. She can fly, but as well as that, she pops in and out of places just like magic. And then there's little Ollie Owl, and he's a very cute character. He sits on Mr. Jolly Tree. Mr. Jolly Tree is a very happy talking tree who has a very deep voice. Well, he has a deep voice in the audiobook anyway. It's really cute. And then there's Luian. And Luian is a Pegasus. And he's a very majestic character. And he makes a grand entrance in the well scene. The well scene, he comes in at the beginning of the well scene. But the entire well scene, I think, is a very captivating scene. And as well as the magical ending, it's very beautiful and very magical, but I can't tell you any more about that because it will give too much away.
I know. Let's just say it's a modern fairy tale, and it is absolutely beautiful. And I just imagine. Do you have grandchildren by any chance, or young children, or yeah?
I certainly do. I have three beautiful grandchildren. My daughter is Amali, and she's produced three beautiful grandchildren for me. There's Hunter. He's two. Harper, who's three, and Amali, who's five.
Wow.
Now, yeah,
oh,
Amali.
Gosh, your daughter's a busy girl that's three under five.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
Wow.
She's very young. But Amali absolutely loves my story. And, you know, for someone such a young age, she's actually got it already.
Yeah.
So she's actually taken these messages from the book, and she's understanding them. So I love reading to her anyway, but when this book came out, you know, every time I go over there, she just wants me to put the audio book on, and I sit with her while she's listening and just looking at the illustrations in the book, and that's, you know, precious moments for me. But she's also memorized her version of the messages in my book, and my daughter captured it on video, and it's just so beautiful. And I know it's impacting her life because she said to her her brother, you know, don't hit me, Harper, love me. So, you know, that to me is very rewarding because I can see it's already working, and she's only five.
Wow, that's beautiful. So, Nicole, tell me, where can our listeners get a copy of Nirvana, The Angel Dream? And this is just part one of a series of three. So
that's right. Yeah, there's three
How
books.
How can they get a copy?
Okay, you can go to my website, www.nirvanabooks.com. It's available at Balboa Press, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and it's available at all bookshops worldwide. You just have to go in and ask for it. And also the audiobooks are available from www.nirvanabooks.com/audiobooks and www.nialmusic.com/audiobooks.
Fantastic. Nicole, it's been an absolute pleasure spending time with you this morning. I look forward to the second and the third edition of Nirvana. I can only imagine where you're going to take the story. Is Flynn going to remain in all of the stories, or does he have little friends that come along? But don't tell me. Don't tell me.
It's very exciting. I'm telling you. So there's a special character in the next book.
Okay.
I'll just say that.
All right. Thank you, Nicole.
It's been my pleasure, Deb. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Until next time. All right. Thank you, everybody. My name is Deb Han. I've been with you today with Indie Book Publishing. And until next time, bye for now.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing. And we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings from Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled, Choose Spirit Now. What would your life be like? What would the world be like if learning to live awake was made a priority? And the subtitle, Wake Up to an Exquisite Life. Our author, Ginger Graff Dunaway, joins me from Mobile, Alabama. Ginger, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Share a little of your background. How did you get interested in positive thinking and changing your life?
Well, it pretty much began when I was 8 years old, and that's when my parents started fighting every night. My dad had flirted with another woman, and it brought up a lot of feelings of betrayal and rage and anger in my mom. She had watched her own mother go through these feelings when her father had multiple affairs. And so my mother, going into marriage, knew that that's not what she wanted to happen. So when my dad flirted with another woman, it brought up all this stuff. And even though he hadn't cheated at that point, she just fought with him every night of what if, you know, what if she hadn't stopped it? You know, what could have happened, what would have happened. And every night, my brother, my sister, and I watched as she sort of played out all these different scenarios in her mind and head of what could have happened, and just, you know, fought with my dad over her feelings. And so what was interesting about going through this at age 8 was that I could remember how I felt before this happened with my family, and then I could remember how I felt once this started happening. So before, I felt, you know, very content in the world, very safe, very secure, very loved by my parents. And then after this, when they started fighting, it was like the rug got pulled out from underneath me. I suddenly felt very lost in the world, deeply sad, and just didn't know, you know, what was up and what was down. And so it wasn't until years later, And so I began my yoga practice at about age 25. But I began feeling this peace and contentment again that I had lost as a child at that age, around eight. So what I realized in hindsight was that just what I refer to in the book as the childhood drama with my parents, it sort of started me on this search to find that peace and contentment again in life, you know, feel whole again, feel complete again. And so once I found yoga, that's when I first began feeling that again.
Is that where you discovered the research or search into ego and what the ego concept is in human nature?
A little bit. That was my first introduction. And then, you know, years later, I read A Course in Miracles, and that really, really went into the ego in such a depth that it really kind of hit home and helped me understand the ego in much more depth than I'd ever, you know, realized before. You know, I majored in psychology and minored in human development in college, and it was fascinating to really kind of read A Course in Miracles and really see the ego in much more depth and see how it manipulates us and tricks us in life, and then be able to see in hindsight, you know, what kind of happened with my mom, you know, her ego getting involved with what was going on, and, you know, her learning all of that from her own mother, you know, and her own mother's ego and going through her betrayal in life. And so, it helped me to understand all that. And
you begin writing this how long ago, and how long did it take? Who was your target audience?
Well, I began writing it about 2.5 years ago. I'd always wanted to write about kind of what had happened with my childhood and kind of, you know, maybe work through it that way. But every time I tried to write about it, it was always negative. It was about pitying myself and, you know, blaming my parents and judging my parents, and it never felt right. So it wasn't until, you know, finding yoga and finding A Course in Miracles that I really started, you know, feeling this weight lift off of me and feeling that peace and contentment and really understanding kind of what had happened and what happens really in all our lives when things like this, you know, happen, when this life happens to us and it kind of knocks us off kilter. So initially, you know, I mean, I'd always wanted to write about it, but now I wanted to write about it in terms of, you know, sharing my story, but sharing how, you know, really what was going on, you know, behind the curtain, so to speak, and how the ego was kind of pulling the string, and be able to help other people, you know, see how things in life and their own stories, you know, how the ego was kind of playing out.
Would you describe your book as more of a self-help book, or would you call it a biographical sketch of your life and your journey?
It's really a self-help book. It's a guidebook. So, you know, it's really going to help people understand the ego. It's kind of it's broken up into three sections. The first one is understanding the ego. The second is thinning out and rising above the ego, and the third is beyond the ego. So what yoga and A Course in Miracles both say is that the ego is the cause of all of our suffering. And suffering doesn't always have to be, you know, really horrible suffering that we can think of that's happening in the world. It can be even just daily stress and anxiety. It can be, you know, the suffering of feeling jealous throughout your day, or feeling really insecure, or guilt, or worry. You know, that suffering too that we don't necessarily think about. So with yoga and A Course in Miracles saying that the ego is the cause of all suffering, well, you know, to me that, you know, sends up a big light bulb. Like, this is what we need to be understanding is, you know, what is this ego? What is it all about? How does it get built in our lives? And, you know, what can we do to begin seeing through it and rising above it? So I like to kind of, you know, explain the ego as a cloud that basically surrounds us. And as we move through life, we sort of build this cloud around us, and it gets built by different thoughts and beliefs that we learn from people around us, society, you know, friends, family. And some of us have really thick, dense clouds, and we can't really see through the other side. And then some of us have really light, wispy clouds. And, you know, we kind of have moments of feeling peace and contentment. And then we have moments where we feel maybe completely lost and feel like life sort of lost its luster and its meaning. And so this book is, it's a guidebook. It's teaching you, you know, what the yoga practices are doing, what the course teachings are helping you to basically start seeing through this cloud. It, the yoga practice is great at helping us establish what we call the observer in life and being able to see how we've built this ego and how we've actually come to think that we are our egos.
Would you suggest yoga as the first step to getting an observation, maybe a disinterested observation of who we are and what we are and how to correct those missteps?
Definitely. You know, for me, that was my first step. Doesn't have to be. I think the courses is a great, you know, place to start, but it is sort of overwhelming initially when you start to read it. So what I think yoga kind of helps, of course, the miracles do, is it really establishes a practice for you to go into. And so what it does is it takes you beyond the mind. It takes you beyond trying to understand all of this and what's happening and whether you believe it or not. And the practice actually takes you beyond all that into actually an experience of it. So,
you included some quotes, I guess, from the Course of Miracles in your book also. Is that correct?
And from, you know, some various books.
Sure.
Some yogic books and,
Would you say your book is unique to others in the marketplace that also deal with maybe similar ideas or concepts? What makes yours stand out a little bit?
Well, I think the blend of yoga and Course in Miracles, you know, you've got this ancient practice of yoga, which is saying very similar concepts to what the Course is saying, which is, you know, it's a newer book. It was written in the 70s, but it's also seen as, you know, Jesus' teachings, which were about 2,000 years ago. So when you see these similarities, you know, it really sort of helps you to understand and realize how important, you know, living life awake and learning what awakening is all about, learning what enlightenment is all about, how important that is. Because, you know, it's not necessarily something that you have to do, but it sure makes life a whole lot easier and a whole lot more wonderful, you know, if you can live this way.
Introduce your book to my listeners in a couple of paragraphs. Let them know why they should get a copy of your book, Choose Spirit Now.
Well, you know, this book, it shares 6 steps to awakening that I've come up with based on the Yoga Course in Miracles. And so it's basically a guidebook of, you know, how to move through these steps, what these steps are. And then it's also got a coinciding website, ChooseSpiritNow.com. And on the website, there's an online retreat. And it basically takes you, the online retreat takes you through the concepts that I explain in the book. It also has some journaling exercises that kind of help you to move through, you know, opening up and understanding the ego and basically distancing yourself from the ego. You know, realizing that you are separate from it, that, you know, your truest, what yoga calls the truest nature, you know, is the spirit that's inside of all of us, and realizing that the ego is just kind of overlaying all of that. It also has, the online retreat also has contemplative practices, so yogic practices that kind of help you go beyond just understanding these concepts and these steps to actually experiencing them, as like I said earlier, you know, establishing that observer and being able to kind of distance yourself from the ego and begin to see through that ego cloud that may surround you all the time. It may surround you just here and there, but allow you to get to a place where you can actually rise above and see over the cloud, you know, and see your spirit and your underlying, this underlying spirit that connects all of us and that connects us with God. And makes us realize that, you know, we are more than the body. We are more than the mind. And, you know, really feel that in every moment in life. And that's what really helps us to kind of sink in and live life awake and enjoy every moment of life, kind of knowing what the bigger picture is all about.
So it's motivational, especially the subtitle of your book, Wake Up to an Exquisite Life. So you have some positive steps that people can take to not only observe where they are, but where they should be, and give them some step-by-steps where they can improve their existence. Is that, in a nutshell, what you're referring to?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ginger, what was your goal with Choose Spirit Now?
Well, you know, as I was writing the book, many times I had to go back and write and rewrite. And what I found is that sometimes when I went back and reread what I'd written, I found myself in tears of gratitude, because I'd always felt like a higher part of myself was writing this book. And so as I went back and sort of reread some of these parts, I had this overwhelming sense that my higher self was speaking to me through what it guided me to write. And I really just hope that others will feel the same as they read it and feel that they are being called to remember themselves through this book. You know, remember this higher part of themselves, the spirit that lives within, you know, something beyond the body, beyond the mind. And feel that they're being called to remember that they are, you know, a part of God, and that nothing can take that away from them.
All right. The title is Choose Spirit Now. What would your life be like? What would the world be like if learning to live awake was made a priority? The subtitle, Wake Up to an Exquisite Life. Our author, Ginger Graff Dunaway. Ginger, where can my listeners get a copy of your book?
Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and BalboaPress.com.
You also mentioned a website. What would that be?
ChooseSpiritNow.com.
ChooseSpiritNow.com. And is there a secondary follow-up book in the works for you?
Not as of yet, but I am thinking about maybe starting to write more about, you know, relationships and how this pertains more to relationships. There's a little bit of that in Choose Spirit Now. It's really, you know, all of this waking up is all about relationships and, you know, how we deal with each other as we move through this life. But maybe, you know, something that's a little bit more detailed on that subject.
More detailed. Well, if that happens, we'd love to talk to you again and share your ideas on that subject as well. This book, again, is titled Choose Spirit Now. You can do a search online if you can't find it at your local book provider, and they can order one in. The author, Ginger Graff, G-R-A-F, last name Dunaway, D-U-N-A-W-A-Y. Ginger, thank you for joining me today and sharing your story.
Thank you.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.